From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, the governor hosts a storm recovery conference. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on his conversation with the state comptroller, and a mid-level court upholds the use of facility dogs. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Launched in Albany this week, the New York Rising Community Construction Program's goal is to empower localities to develop and implement recovery plans after the damage done by storms Sandy, Lee, and Irene, and more recently by the severe flooding in the Mohawk Valley caused by heavy rains in late June. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
New York is no stranger to disaster. At Thursday's conference in Albany, attended by hundreds of state, federal, and local officials, Governor Andrew Cuomo said he understands that and is leading areas of the state that have fallen victim to severe weather in a quest to build back New York better than before.
Oceans are getting warmer. It's changed the climate. And a product of that are the extreme weather conditions. So you can't stop the flood, you can't stop the rain, you can't stop the wind. You can be better prepared for it. You can be ready for an emergency.
The New York Rising Community Construction Program involves approximately 100 qualifying communities that will be eligible to share in more than $500 million of funding made available through the federal supplemental appropriation the governor worked with Congress to obtain earlier this year. Cuomo believes communities know best when it comes to rebuilding.
What we're trying to do today is a totally different approach and a totally different prong. And if we've been going top down, bottom up, what does the community think it needs to rebuild? And what are the best ideas and what's the best vision that the community has to rebuild? And let's fund the community's vision rather than asking the community to fit in to the template that is established up above. And if you can put both of those approaches together, well, that would really be the optimum. So the federal government's doing what it should be doing, the state's doing what it should be doing, but the community is also fashioning the specifics to work for the community.
The plans will be driven by the needs of each community and developed by regional planning committees of community leaders, experts, and officials. Grant amounts will be based on FEMA-assessed damage levels, as well as applications for new infrastructure and other mitigation, and will be awarded once the community's plan is complete and submitted to the state for approval. Communities on the list have 8 months to come up with a plan. The state will fund it. Bonuses will be awarded to the best plans in 8 areas, including best use of technology and best use of community involvement. Central New York Republican Senator Joe Griffo.
This is an important step, and we'll continue to work with the governor and the legislature as we look forward to continue to position this state to deal with these incidents of climatic change that are affecting all our communities.
The governor announced he will appoint Jamie Rubin as the director of the New York Rising Community Reconstruction Program. Rubin is currently senior advisor to HUD Secretary Sean Donovan, who was in Albany for the conference, and New York State Director of the President's Hurricane Sandy Recovery and Rebuilding Task Force.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Joining us now, our political observer, Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, they always say in the news business, the dog days of summer are some of the slowest news times of the year, but not the case this week.
We're going to start with the governor. Governor Cuomo won. A new report out this week from a liberal-leaning group called the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington has categorized the governor, Governor Cuomo, that is, among the 18 worst leaders in the nation. And we'll get to some of the other things involving the governor after your response to that.
Hey, David, how would you have liked to have been the fly on the wall when the governor saw this report? I mean, you know, here was a guy who started out admired by everybody, the Cuomo name, and has a couple of pensions that may get him into trouble. Now, look, this report, if I'm reading it correctly, basically says the guy is all show and not enough go. That basically what he is doing is being extraordinarily reactive. This is Alan speaking now, me, to events. So he doesn't always think them through. So he now has, for example, appointed a Moreland Act Commission. Now, this commission's job is to root out corruption around the state. And on this commission, he's put a lot of very important people, whether or not they are appointed because he expects that, you know, they'll do what they're supposed to do and protect him, or whether they're going to go wherever they want to go is interesting. The other group that Cuomo selected was, of course, the J-Cope, or sometimes referred to in Albany as the J-Joke, because they haven't done anything that has really distinguished themselves. This was the group that it was going to police the ethics of everybody, and it was regarded as a very important contribution for Cuomo because this is the first time the legislature didn't have their own ethics people looking at them and doing nothing. So this was going to be a group that... But, of course, the legislature got to appoint many of the members of this group. And now the Moreland Act Commission seems to have a little fire in its eye looking at the other ethics commission, the J-Joke Commission, and sending them a warning saying don't destroy any of your records, either electronic or verbal or any other way, which means I think you may be sitting on some material that we're going to find very helpful in our investigations, and we're going to want it, and you are not to get rid of it. Now, the governor has been criticized himself for destroying electronic messages and also, you know, after a defined period of time. And also, he's been looked at for not being what he should when it comes to transparency, letting everybody see everything he's doing. So you have a Moreland Act Commission at war with, at least seeming war with J-Cope, the Ethics Commission, and Cuomo being criticized for using BlackBerries rather than using electronic mail, which may be something that is more permanent than the BlackBerry messages. So we really have a very interesting scenario developing here.
Another interesting conversation you had this week was with New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli, Alan. Let's start with the comptroller's race in New York City. You asked him about that. He's endorsed Scott Stringer. And you asked him about, you know, the role of the comptroller in New York City, and had some interesting comments when it comes to Eliot Spitzer.
Well, David, everybody has to remember that Eliot Spitzer is now running for the comptroller's job in New York City. And the theory is that this is his entree back into politics. If he gets forgiven and the people for his dalliances and the people say, okay, we want the same kind of fighting comptroller that we had a fighting attorney general. And it looks like they very well may say that because the polls are showing people really want to do that. It may well be that Spitzer gets elected, but the establishment is for Scott Stringer. He's a nice man. He was an assemblyman. He is well known to many of the politicians. He's from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and he is much less of a wild card than Eliot Spitzer is. So now, if the people of New York elect Eliot Spitzer as the comptroller, you better believe that you're going to see some interesting results because this guy knows what to do with power, as just as he did when he was attorney general and led the nation looking at some of the greatest excesses of Wall Street and way ahead of things like the Federal Trade Commission and the rest. So if he's comptroller, which is not a big job in New York City, you know, you're the chief auditor of the city agencies and the rest. But now he starts to look at the people that the city has been investing in and going after certain corporations because of their ethics and their morality. It may well be very interesting. And I think the people of New York City are sort of fascinated with that.
Finally, Alan, the federal government refused to give aid to those in the Mohawk Valley who were affected by severe flooding, something that we've been seeing more and more of in recent years, and in the middle of a huge heat wave this week. And the governor and some of his folks in the administration held a conference this week about how communities can better prepare for some of the changes coming with climate. And I think, at least from what I've seen around the country, that the governor has been one of the few people to really try to address this issue.
Well, yes, he has. And to his great credit, he's been out in front on this. You know, David, Andrew Cuomo is known from the very beginning. It's what defeated his father. Upstate is different from New York City. Popular in New York City, but his ratings upstate are not that good. And when he went after the SAFE Act and had that passed on guns, his popularity took a little bit of a dive upstate. So he's known from the very beginning he has to do more for upstate. I don't think that we should be in the business of saying what his motivations are, his political motivations. I think we should judge him on what he's doing. And the fact is that he has known, like Al Gore, his friend, and others, that climate change is a very serious business and that we ought to prepare. And if he wants to be president of the United States, and I think many people think he does, then it's a perfect thing to do for both good reasons, as I have just suggested, and also because sooner or later, people are going to have to start waking up and seeing that we have poisoned this planet, we've poisoned the atmosphere, we are responsible ourselves for global warming, and I think the fact that he's out front on this could do nothing but help him in the long run.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The New York State Association of Counties is concerned about sales tax revenue reports indicating negative growth in the second quarter. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The association reports that overall second quarter sales tax revenue numbers increased across New York, but it also finds that on average, the percentage of growth per county in the second quarter compared to last year was 1.6%. The average growth per county for the first 6 months of 2013 was about 1.8%. The association also says 80% of the sales tax increase is coming from the four counties most impacted by Hurricane Sandy, concluding that the increases are driven by spending on recovery. The association further reports that 20 counties saw negative sales tax growth in the second quarter of 2013 compared to 2012. The New York State Association of Counties Executive Director Stephen Aquario.
Since this great recession that hit New York State, the concern remains that the average growth is about half of what it was for the past 20-year period. So is slow growth in this New York economy the new normal as the economy continues to reset itself?
Collection of sales tax revenues varies from county to county. Steuben County Administrator Mark Alger, president-elect of the association, says his county has seen a 3 to 3.5% decline this year over last year. He calls that a reflection of the economy across New York's southern tier.
One of the things that is certainly impacting it is just the overall economic climate for the state. New York is notorious for its high taxes and unionized labor, and I think that's a reflection of the fact that you have companies that are reluctant to add jobs. That doesn't mean that the economy is generally overall negative. We've seen quite a bit of growth in selected sectors of the economy in the southern tier. For example, tourism is always a strong economic component and really does buoy our sales tax collections here. But generally, manufacturing is on a decline in the southern tier, and we really need to do as much as we can to bolster that across the whole region.
Warren County saw an increase in sales tax revenues in the first quarter of this year of about 7.5%. The second quarter was down 0.6% due to adjustments in prior filings, according to Supervisor Fred Monroe. He expects strong revenues to continue due to strong tourism spending in Lake George.
I think it was a little surprising that the trend that we hoped was starting in the first quarter didn't continue into the second quarter. But just looking at the activity around the county in July so far, it looks like it's going to be strong. So personally, I'm not too concerned about it.
The New York State Department of Taxation and Finance monthly comparison of net collections shows the state sales tax up 8.5% this June over last June, and local sales taxes up 7.4%. Fiscal Policy Institute Executive Director Frank Morrow says the counties are indicating a need for watchful waiting.
Statewide, sales tax growth is strong for the state as a whole for the first 3 months of the fiscal year, which is the second quarter of the calendar year. Sales tax revenue statewide was up 6%, local up 5.9%. But there's both bright spots, and the New York State Association of Counties is raising a concern about the evenness of the strength across the state, the evenness of the recovery.
Economist Hugh Johnson says consumer spending picked up a bit in the first quarter and then receded some in the second quarter.
So to see a slowdown in sales tax receipts certainly is not a surprise. It's troubling. Sure, it's troubling. Sure, it puts pressure on policymakers at the local level. But I think although it's troubling, it's certainly not surprising, and it's very consistent with the numbers we see on a national level.
Counties project their sales tax revenue as they develop their annual budgets. If revenues do not meet projections, officials may have to consider mid-year cuts.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
A coalition of gun rights advocates and others announced recently they are forming a new political movement to get what they say are disaffected and disenfranchised New Yorkers to vote. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
The leaders of the new group include the state's Rifle and Pistol Association, but President Tom King says it goes beyond the state's recently enacted stiff new gun control legislation.
It's not just gun rights. It's the whole spectrum of constitutional rights that are being infringed in New York State. You know, that's why we're not saying that you have to be a pro-Second Amendment guy or you have to be a hunter. You know, this is for the everyday person who feels disenfranchised.
The coalition includes a landowners group that wants to lease their land to gas drilling companies for hydrofracking, an advocate for urban schools, and several conservative elected state lawmakers, including Rochester area Assemblyman Bill Nojay. Nojay, a former talk radio host, says he's disturbed by the swift passage of the gun laws, known as the SAFE Act, which he says illustrates a bigger problem in Albany.
The top-down leadership style that produces things like the SAFE Act being voted upon inside of 45 minutes, nobody had read it. That's not healthy for a legislature. That's not a functioning legislature.
Ayesha Kreutz, a Christian minister, is head of the Frederick Douglass Foundation of New York, a conservative African-American group. She says her concerns include the deterioration of upstate's inner cities and a failed education system. And she says school board votes routinely attract just one quarter to one third of eligible voters.
We have 9% graduation rate for black males in Rochester, New York. 9%. And that's a crime. But then you look at who's voting, and it's the same, you know, 4,000 or 7,000 people, whatever it is, in this. So we have to get this push and get people to understand just how important their vote is.
The groups are modeling their efforts on the successful Democratic Party initiative of the 1990s, known as Rock the Vote. It resulted in the registration of hundreds of thousands of young people. They also plan a fundraiser featuring country musicians at the Altamont Fairgrounds near Albany at the end of the summer. They say they chose the location because all of upstate's major highways intersect just a few miles from the site. But Assemblyman Nojay says for now they aren't going to promote any specific candidates, but he says they do hope primary challengers will emerge to run against incumbents in the state legislature all the way down to local county sheriffs and county clerks.
If it takes a primary to send a message to the Democrat legislator from the Syracuse area that he or she needs to bring that message to the governor, then that's what it'll involve. If you've got Republicans that are looking at who voted for and against the SAFE Act and decide that maybe it's time for a primary to send the message to some of the Republican legislators, then that's what will be involved.
While most Republicans in the Assembly voted against the gun control laws back in January, many of the GOP members of the Senate voted for it. A spokesman for Republicans in the Senate expressed concern that the new group would divide the Republican Party. Spokesman Scott Reif says that would only strengthen the Democrats in the state and what he calls their circus of candidates like Elliot Spitzer, Anthony Weiner, and disgraced former Assemblyman Vito Lopez. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
A mid-level New York court has upheld the use of a facility dog in a sexual abuse case from Dutchess County. It's a case that inspired a state senator from Dutchess to introduce a law named after the dog. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn reports.
Rosie's Law, introduced by Democratic Senator Terry Gibson, would permit judges the discretion to allow certain witnesses to be accompanied by a facility dog when providing testimony. The law is named after Rosie, the first judicially approved courtroom facility dog in New York. Gibson says with Rosie's help, a 15-year-old girl from Dutchess County, known as Jessica, was able to provide testimony against her father in a sexual and child abuse case. And the appellate court's decision to uphold the use of the facility dog, says Gibson, should help his bill.
The decision that came out today is of great help to my bill because it shows that the justice system is in agreement with us and that these dogs should be allowed. And so the only thing missing is that New York State needs to put into law, into writing, that courthouse facility dogs are allowed, and that would give victims of all types of crimes an extra tool that they could use to help testify against their perpetrator.
The judges rejected the father's appeal of his 2011 convictions for predatory sexual assault against a child. Among his claims, the father says the golden retriever made the 15-year-old unduly sympathetic to the jury. The unanimous ruling by four justices says the appeal failed to show the dog's presence was impermissible under state law or impaired his right to a fair trial. Kathleen Murphy is executive director of the Center for the Prevention of Child Abuse in Dutchess County. Jessica's case came through her organization. Murphy supports Rosie's Law and says the court decision is highly significant.
It's groundbreaking. You know, this is the first time in New York State that a therapy dog has been allowed on the stand to help a child who's been so severely sexually abused. You know, I hope now that other judges across the state will pick this up and realize that this is something, you know, for these children. And it's also important to note that, you know, I hope that someday that therapy dogs will become available to all children, no matter what they have to testify about, whether it's for the prosecution or for the defense.
Rosie, who died in November of 2012, was specially trained to sit for hours and clue into the stress of the witness and nudge her when she froze. Murphy says allowing facility dogs to be used in this manner will help break the cycle of child abuse.
We don't spend enough time giving our children their voices. And particularly in this area of child abuse, they have to be given their voices because what keeps them in their pain and having them being hurt repetitively is because they won't talk. They're too afraid.
Gibson notes the law would give judges the discretion to allow facility dogs for not only child abuse victims, but for any victim or witness of a violent crime or sexual assault, as well as any children or adults impaired in any way, on the defense or prosecution side. Democratic Assemblyman Frank Skartatos introduced the bill in the Assembly. Gibson says he's been picking up co-sponsors since having introduced the bill in April and says he is making progress in educating his colleagues about the issue.
And I think that next session, we may very likely see this pass because this gives us some evidence that we didn't have before, which is the justice system is siding with us. And we could actually save the taxpayers a lot of money by eliminating the possibility of these types of appeals if we could pass this law.
The 39-year-old father in the case is serving 25 years to life.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1329. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.